welcome to the Cingola Zone. It is Tuesday, February 25th, 2014. This is Deanna Cingola, and this weekly program is sponsored by the American Free Press, whose website is AmericanFreePress.net. I am a subscriber to the American Free Press and recommend a subscription to that newspaper as well as to the wonderful historical journal, The Barnes Review, whose website is BarnesReview.org. That's B-A-R-N-E-S, BarnesReview.org. Please visit both websites. Support the efforts of the people who report accurate history and contemporary events. Be sure to look at the limited quantity sale, which comes with a free digital subscription. All righty. My websites are Cingola.com and SpingolaSpeaks.info. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@Cingola.com. Unfortunately, my main computer is in the shop getting repaired from a cyber attack. So if you've emailed me to my regular email, I didn't get it. So hopefully I will be getting my computer back today. The U.S. government, a corporation, exists and functions solely for the purpose of protecting other corporations, those in which it invests huge sums of money. Every government agency, including but not limited to the CIA, the FBI, the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. military, the Patent and Trademark Office, and hundreds of other agencies, exist to protect the corporations. The government also shields and defends occupational labor unions such as the AMA. In addition to using military force to assist corporations, the government has instituted trade agreements beginning with Israel in 1985 with the Israel-United States Free Trade Agreement. We all know about the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, congressional bribery about the North American Free Trade Agreement, known as pork barrel promises, totaled $50 billion. By January 1, 1999, due to NAFTA, U.S. job losses amounted to 600,000. There are dozens of other trade agreements, all of which benefit corporations in search of cheap or, in this country, slave labor, such as in the privatized corporate prison industry. The government allows corporations to fluoridate the water, put aspartame in your food, and heaven only knows what else, in addition to creating GMO crops. The U.S. government permits the pharmaceutical industry to target everyone in the country with billions of dollars of so-called legal drugs, while the military facilitates the dissemination of the drug cartels' illegal drugs from other countries, this time from Afghanistan via its phony war. Following World War II, the U.S. government, using its T forces, plundered everything of value in the Axis countries, seizing at least 300,000 patents just from Germany. Corporate heads actually visited Germany as consultants on these seizures. After Tesla died, the government confiscated all of his work and distributed his revolutionary ideas along with all of those patents from Germany to its favorite corporations. Again, the corporation nation, as Clint Richardson calls it, works for and in behalf of corporate interests and will do anything imaginable, all sorts of damage control, in order to protect those corporations from all culpability and justice for the death and destruction that they continue to inflict throughout the world. Do you remember when water was relatively free and unadulterated from the faucet? Then a corporation introduced Evian bottled water. A friend of mine a few years ago noted the fact that Evian, spelled backwards, is naive. I wonder if there is something to that. Tesla believed that everyone should have access to safe energy without having to pay for it, just as everyone used to have access to water. Dr. Stanley Milham talks about the health issues that erupted through the metered corporate control of electricity. Now, corporate interests are attempting to attach a dangerous radiation-emitting smart meter to every home in America. All of this is an assault on every individual. All of these issues are relevant to today's guest, who is Dr. Judy Wood. And We would like you to visit drjudywood.com/WTC for audio or for visual images of what she might be talking about today. Her other website is wheredidthetowersgo.com. Our other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is Check the Evidence. Dr. Judy Wood wrote the book, Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Welcome, Dr. Wood and Andrew.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having us here.
Well, thank you so much. I haven't talked to Andrew for quite some time, except a few Skype messages, text messages from time to time. But anyway, I'm glad, very glad that you're both here. And may we just start out with me asking one question, because somebody suggested this crazy idea to me about a week ago. Andrew, will you please confirm or deny whether or not you are Dr. Wood's handler?
I will deny that I'm Dr. Wood's handler. And I can speak from experience that if such a person was given such a job, it would be unenviable.
Yeah, Andrew learned early on. No one can tell Judy what to do.
that's right, and I think that's absolutely right, and absolutely the way things should be.
Absolutely,
because it's very important that people understand that the way that Dr. Wood thinks and uses her mental and intellectual capacities is the way they should be used, really, because they then, can't really be influenced other than by what evidence is in front, and being of her and being studied, if you see what I'm trying to say. Because she has that way of approaching things, that has allowed every one of us to benefit from what she's discovered.
Exactly.
Is what I'd like to sort of put in a nutshell, really.
Sure. And it's amazing that somebody would suggest this, and I said, well, no, that's ridiculous. Anyway, I just wanted to get that on record. So that's clarified, definitely. And I do agree with you. She does have a way of looking at things that none of the rest of us really have. I'm just always amazed that she can see things that I think I'm relatively intelligent, but she sees things that I don't often see, so.
Yeah, and I would say exactly the same sort of thing, and, what I tried to do in our, when I first got to know Dr. Wood and started writing these things, it was, I think I did it for two reasons. One was to set up a historical record, which I knew was going to be important to some people at least, even if that only ever turned out to be a small minority. But it was also a learning experience for me, which, when I embarked upon it, I realised that I was going to learn quite a lot of things, and indeed I have. So, in that sense, it's almost for selfish reasons that I've done it.
Sure. Well, you have been one of her greatest supporters, and for that I applaud you. And that's a wonderful thing to have that kind of consistent, ongoing support, particularly given the verbal assaults that Dr. Wood has experienced.
Well, Andrew also has the ability to look at, look at this piece of evidence, and he'll look at the piece of evidence. Mm-hmm. He won't say, well, I've already been told thus and so, so I'm not going to look.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key, is actually looking at what is there, not what you're told to see or what you're told is there.
Sure.
And I think also, I would say that, Dr. Wood Dr. Wood and I have talked a lot about a lot of things, and sometimes, you know, I'm only human, and I get a bit frustrated because I think, well, Dr. Wood's told me this before. Why is she telling me this? Why is she telling me this? And then quite often I will realize that there is a subtlety she's trying to draw my attention to, you know, and I'm wanting to do something else or, you know, or
Thank
something
you.
Like this. And sometimes I get frustrated. But then at the end of it, you know, I can say, oh, right, that's what she's trying to explain to me. And so I think that what I'm trying to say there is it does require a lot of patience and a lot of study, you know, to sort of, in a sense, catch up with the place that she's gotten to.
And also,
you know, so
to look beyond the superficial, because I think our culture trains people just look at the superficial and then move on. And you think you have the whole picture by, you know, just getting a couple of tidbits, and your mind fills in the rest of what you assume based on those few tidbits. But I remember, Andrew knows this story pretty well, although you knew about John Hutchison's stuff already, and I hadn't, Andrew, why is that car parked upside down? That was three times I said that. Then you broke out in curses and so forth.
Oh, pretty much, yeah. I do remember that, and I don't think I'd seen those pictures before, or certainly if I had, I obviously hadn't at that point connected them to these phenomena. So yeah, that's but one example, you know. So yeah,
sure. I think that was a big turning point for you, a big aha moment, where then you start seeing, you know, all the other details I've been pointing out just unlocked it.
Mm.
Okay, now the cars were upside down. For those in the listening audience who do not know what you're referring to, tell us where we might find that picture. On drwood.com/WTC, and what this phenomenon might be, or probably is. The only thing it could be, actually.
Well, we aren't going to make assumptions as to what caused it, but what we can say is a building collapsed without having much material left at the bottom isn't going to turn cars upside down. And without, you know, other things happening, like stripping leaves from trees and, you know, whatever else.
Sure.
If there's such a huge gust of wind, why was all this paper sitting at the base?
Ah, indeed.
That's right.
Indeed. That was quite amazing. And we've all been told, indoctrinated, and getting back to the comment that you made some time back, is that we were on that day, on 9/11, we were all really, we were traumatized by what was going on. And you said, the general population is suffering from trauma-based mind control. 9/11 was an attack on human consciousness. How can one person find it so easy to destroy? Oh, okay, well, I won't say that comment. But, because that relates to something else. But it was an attack on human consciousness.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yes, and trauma-based mind control. That it was an abrupt change, bigger change than I've ever seen any one day in my lifetime. The JFK thing traumatized people, but it wasn't the same. This shut off people's ability to think, and I can never forget the discomfort I had in the faculty conference room, surrounded by my colleagues, also faculty in engineering, who taught, you know, same or similar courses, watching the TV set and just assuming it's a collapse and, you know, the whole story. And I was trying to say, look, to put a joke on it, that isn't a collapse. The building's turning into fluff, you know. And they looked at me like I was crazy. Because they're already, you know, sucked into it and like grabbing their pitchforks ready to go get the bad guy, whoever that was. They're turned off their brains. And, you know, these people just shut down their thinking. And also that's what anger does. It's one of the lowest forms of instinct, animal instinct. And when you get in revenge mode, it shuts off logic function.
Right.
And that's an important thing to remember when people say, let's go get whodunit, Well, you're doing the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Bin Laden, Baghdad, or whatever. It's diverting you away from logical thinking.
Sure. And absolutely, I remember that day. We all remember that day, that if we were old enough, and certainly I'm old enough, but we all remember what we were doing, and they played the same scenes over and over. They kept saying the word collapse, 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 and then of
collapse
course,
and pile.
Pile. And then Dan Rather also brought up controlled demolition. And that was all programming to make us believe that possibly controlled demolition has something to do with this alleged collapse of the World Trade Center. And you have mentioned before that it wasn't a destruction of the World Trade Center, the two towers. It was a cleansing.
I use the word dustification.
But it was a cleaning away of something. I wrote down that you said it was a cleansing.
No.
I've listened to just about everything that you've said. I've listened to all the conferences and...
I don't know if I would have been removed the towers from being
okay.
there without removing the adjacent buildings.
Okay.
That's an important thing, because you can't use controlled demolition to take out a building with another building just a few feet away and not damage, not destroy the next building.
Sure.
Especially when the building you're destroying, you know, is 110 stories.
Right.
I mean, it was that, you know, the only buildings with a WTC prefix were destroyed on outright, you know, or during the main events, and then were taken down afterwards. Except, of course, there was the Bankers Trust, which it was a bit of an enigma in some ways.
It was infected
indeed. No, I don't, you know, we don't really know whether that was accidental to the plan or deliberate, because, you know, I suspect, looking at the way that part unfolded, it was probably accidental, but obviously, you know, I don't really know.
Also, the Millennium Hotel appeared to have been infected, but they took out the infected material and were able to, you know, control the situation. As the initial pictures, it was fuming away, weird fuming coming out of there, but they removed the whole bunch of material. But they announced it was ready to collapse. And, you know, that was in case they had to take it down. But they were able to repair it, and it was fine.
So that's another instance of predictive programming, you know, saying that things are happening or are going to happen, you know, to make people, you know, think about that subconsciously. And, you know, there seems to be a number of aspects of that with 9/11. I mean, not only they started talking about Al-Qaeda, and they mentioned Bin Laden's name, I think, 45 seconds after the alleged second plane.
Yeah. No, that's before the second one. I've got a screenshot where it shows that Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda or whatever on the ticker going across the bottom of the screen. Right, and the second hour isn't fuming yet.
Right. So yeah, and you know, it's pretty extraordinary type of operation, really, 9/11. I think that's why, you know, certainly why I've talked such a lot about it, is because it was just on a different scale, a completely different scale, and we know that it didn't just happen. You know, we know that Al-Qaeda weren't involved in the level of destruction that, you know, was at the World Trade Center. So somebody else must have done it. Somebody else must have orchestrated
it. I won't go to that statement. I'd say you have to define who Al-Qaeda is.
Right, of course.
If Al-Qaeda is the name of the organization that did 9/11, okay, then Al-Qaeda did it. But it's how you define what Al-Qaeda is.
Of course.
See,
what is commonly understood by the you know, Al-Qaeda, which is alleged to be a group of terrorists,
right,
who were based in the Far East, it seems extremely unlikely that they would have been able to turn the towers into dust and so on. But we don't actually know that they couldn't do that, because we don't really know who they are. We know who we're told that they were, but we don't actually know who they were.
And the typical talking point that I hear is that, well, some people say somebody in a cave, you know, did this. Well, I suspect this technology was indeed developed in a cave
yeah.
for security purposes.
Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, or underground somewhere.
Sure.
But, you know, those sorts of things we don't actually know, really. We can only speculate on where mm-hmm. this technology came from, and we can only speculate on who it belongs to. And, you know, when people ask me this question, I say, well, you know, you can go and ask. There's two companies which you can probably go and ask if you wish to, and they may be able to tell you a bit more about the event of 9/11, but they won't, and that's Applied Research Associates and Science Applications International Corporation, who are both defense contractors and were both defendants in Dr. Wood's QI-TAM case in 2007 and 2008.
And they have the ability to direct energy, or do they have the ability? They have direct.
Let's look at you know, where our tax dollars supposedly went. You know, it's this thing called the Star Wars program, which was the massive development of various kinds of energy weapons.
Okay.
So maybe go ask the people there. They might have a better idea.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean,
what the serial numbers are.
You know, I mean, you know, if we could, I like to put it like this, really, essentially, in that we know that there are black budget programs. You can actually go and, you know, if you go to the right parts of the published defense spending and add it all up, you can see these huge gaps. And I think there was another story published the other day about $2.3 or $10 trillion being unaccounted for in Pentagon accounts over the last 10 years or something. I don't know the exact figures in all of this. But the black budget is real. So there are huge sums of money which are on a balance sheet, but we don't know what they're spent on. So that money is going somewhere. And it appears that one of these benefactors of the black, so-called black budget is Science Applications International Corporation. And one of their abilities is to run psychological operations. That's, I think, in there. I think you can find that on their website somewhere, can't you, Dr. Wood? I think, is that correct? I think
Yes. I have
that.
A web page that shows their capabilities before I was filing my case, that I recorded stuff from their website. But one thing that I'd like to point out that a lot of people overlook, it doesn't matter the who part of it. Again, that just draws you into revenge mode and shuts off logical thinking. But let's look at what we do know. What we do know is that there is a technology that exists that can turn the majority of the buildings into dust and midair. We know that's true because it happened. You know, that there's a technology that can do that. There's the proof right there. A lot of people say, well, you don't have proof, you need the serial numbers. No, we have the evidence that the buildings mostly turn to dust in midair, so therefore we know that a technology that can make that happen must exist.
Right. But I think what I was trying to point out was not so much who did it, but we can see kind of how the capability to develop the technology has developed in secret. I'm continually surprised by the lack of discussion of black budget programs. They're very rarely discussed. I mean, one of the topics you'll find discussed on my website is, you know, the subject of extraterrestrial life disclosure and UFOs and that sort of thing. And that is one of the few areas where you hear black budget programs being talked about. But if you, let's take a company like SAIC, which is a big benefactor of the black budget. If that company has an interest in keeping its revenue stream going, and they have the ability as one of their, you know, alleged capabilities to protect the United States of America, to develop psychological operations, for example, to, you know, create propaganda or sophisticated deception programs, then why wouldn't that private company use that that capability to protect its own revenue stream? In other words, it's in their own interests to use their own abilities to deceive people to keep the money flowing into that organization, if you can see what I mean. And I suspect that as, you know, if you look at that as a total sort of area, that allows them to keep what happened on 9/11 secret. That they're assisting in that process in some way.
I hear the cat.
Well, it wasn't my cat, because my cat's just gone out. I managed to let her out without her making too much noise.
No, I know, but, I know that cat's voice.
Well, he has become something of a radio celebrity, I think.
Yes, he has. He likes to participate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he knows as well. This particular feline is quite prescient and knows when these conversations are taking place.
I think so too.
So,
goodness! Now you were talking about black operations, and I think that the general public really does not even think of black operations. They know that the government is corrupt. They know they can't trust the government, and yet they don't really allow their mind to go so far as to think black operations, and that they're actually conducted against the general public, and that they have technology, as I kind of implied in my opening remarks. They have technology that we can't even imagine.
Correct. And, you know, I recently got in touch with somebody, he's called Edgar Fouché, and I did a long discussion with him, which I all put onto YouTube, which I won't go into the details here, but he basically worked as a defense contractor, and he worked on black programs. You know, there are still things which he can't talk about 25, 30 years after he worked on them. There are some things that he can talk about, and so he knows firsthand. For, you know, some of the technology that the NSA has, for example, but a lot of what he knows about is 20 years old, and you know, he wrote a fictional book in which he disclosed a lot of this technology, but you know, even he, through my own conversations with him, he didn't know about the full picture of what happened on 9/11. Because he hadn't really studied it to the depth that Dr. Wood has and I have. And I think, you know, again, without going into the details, once I sort of started to explain a bit to him, he could begin to tie it up with a little bit of what he knew. And the way that we came into contact was partly to do with 9/11 research, actually. And I've come to the conclusion, and I've written a bit of this in, you know, 9/11 Finding the Truth, that the black programs and the technology that was turned into a weapon is also, you know, there is a history to it, and Dr. Woods put some of that in her book. But the bit that the other people don't talk about is the weaponization of it. People talk about, you know, the Tesla technology and the free energy technology, but they do not talk. I mean, if you go, you know, we experienced this when we went to this Breakthrough Energy Movement conference in November 2012. We were both speaking about the weaponization of this technology. Nobody else really almost didn't seem to register with anybody else. You know, they just didn't even go into their you know, they didn't mention it in their talks or anything subsequently, because it does not fit with what they want to talk about, basically,
or what they can conceive of. And I think that we know that by 2025 that the government hopes to weaponize weather, and if they have the technology to weaponize weather, which I'm sure that they've already put into practice, if they have that technology, then why not the technology to direct energy towards destruction?
Yes.
Directed energy has been around for over 100 years. There's a patent on it in the early 1900s. George Pigott.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, you know, we know that they used the technology on 9/11, and you know, I just look at and think, well, what other technology have they got? You know, and you look at some of the technology that Wilhelm Reich developed, for example, where he was, you know, looking at controlling cloud formation with the cloud busters, and that was in the 50s. And hardly anyone talks about that. Some people do, but it's you know, not many people mention it. And I have to wonder myself where that technology went, because I think he was the only scientist, if I've got this right, in the US whose books were burned. You know, and they took out all mention of word orgone energy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Burned books in America?
Yeah.
Surely,
yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Well, when you think about it, excuse me, when you really think about it, isn't the energy that we receive into our homes each and every day, isn't that directed through some, well, through wires and other mechanisms? I mean, this is directed energy. Would
with
it not be?
Cell phones,
yes.
TV remote control,
microwave
television signal, you know, radio signals.
It's all directed energy.
Absolutely, but I think one of the things which I always try and explain to people is that we have mainstream science, we have mainstream physics, and everyone's trained in mainstream physics. I mean, part of my degree was in physics, and so there's this certain model, you know, about how the atom works and how forces work. You know, the electromagnetic force and strong and weak nuclear forces and gravitational force, you know, and you have these four fundamental forces which are meant to be, you know, you can explain physics in terms, all the physics we know can be explained in terms of those forces, but there are a number of other phenomena which you can you can reproduce, and people can watch a video, for example, of a chap called Eric Lathwaite, who's a British physicist, and he did an interesting set of lectures in 1974, or it was actually one particular 1 hour long lecture which I've got on my website, with gyroscopes. And he was just simply, all he had was just, you know, regular gyroscopes, and he'd set them up in particular ways, and he was showing that these gyroscopes physically did not behave according to the laws, you know, of gravitation in certain circumstances. You can simply, you can watch this video, and it's just, it's not tricky or anything. This guy was a member of the Royal Society, which is the oldest scientific society in the world. So what I'm trying to say is that there is a hidden physics, if you will, a black physics, and clearly somebody knows how that physics works, because they have a sufficient knowledge of it to use it to engineer things, and they use it to engineer the destruction of the World Trade Center. In other words, it's a different type of physics that's at work.
I've got an example of it that anyone could recognize. Tornadoes.
Mm.
You know, where does that energy come from? That it can totally dustify a house, or you know, remove just the roof and leave everything else, including the stack of papers, untouched. Wind does not act like that. And if you could, that's a natural example. If you could actually manufacture that same type of energy field, you could do the same thing. You know?
Right.
Dustify a house, you know, make it like a tornado.
Sure. And the elite, as I see them, have always tried, tried to control all sciences. When you're talking about the Royal Society and
absolutely,
they have always controlled and concealed science from the rest of us.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, the way that is done, you know, is that you create a structure, like, for example, the peer review process. Whenever you publish scientific research, you know, if I wanted to publish scientific research myself, you know, I just have a degree in computer science and physics, and if I was to write an academic paper and try and submit it, it probably wouldn't be accepted, because I haven't got any advanced degrees. So in other words, if I want to get my research peer-reviewed, I've got to jump through the hoops to get an advanced degree. I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but you've got to go through that process and go through the right doors. And then even if you've done all of that, if you've got enough people within the peer-review process who have, let's shall we say, split
loyalties... Or pay $800 bucks.
Yeah.
Yes. You,
yeah.
Yes.
Or you can do that. You can do, you know, get it published in a vanity journal, I suppose. But you know that's another method. But then people would know that that is a vanity journal, and it wouldn't really be valued in the same way as, you know, a letter published in the Journal of the American Physical Society or something
sure.
like that. So as you say, because all those structures are all set up, and you have to, you know, go through all the hoops to get recognized by them or get published by them, then that acts as a control mechanism. Similarly with the patent office, you know, if you want to protect your intellectual property, then you have to get a patent. So if you have enough people, or even one or two people within the patent office who are reviewing those patents, you can control what happens to those patents.
Yes.
So if you get somebody who tries to patent a free energy device or something that could be some type of weaponry or be developed into a weapon, then you can put that under national security.
I did an article probably back in 2006 about a gentleman, George Horvat, and he had a patent, or he wanted to get a patent on a certain thing. They prolonged the process for about 10 years. I'm trying to find it right now. It's called The Fleecing of an American.
Mm-hmm.
And the patent was for the overhead GPS apparatus that we have on many of the country's roads where they can track you.
Right.
And he actually, George Horvat, his name is Horvat, what he called his system was the traffic speed surveillance system. And it included a roadway monitor receivers that would record speed and vehicle identification and driver information, and it would be transmitted to a central processing station for identifying the speed limit violators. Now, he did not create this for the purposes that it is now being used for. But what they did is that they literally prolonged the process for the patent that they actually stole it from him and sold it to, the government. The government took over the patent. And even though Horvat hired an attorney and went after these people, and he did this back in the 80s, and he initiated a search at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and they took him to the cleaners.
Yeah, it reminds me of what they do in what I call collection agencies. They collect people who have would-be products. Oh, we'll help fund you and get it started. And so you go there and you show them all your designs, and then your designs kind of get killed somehow.
Exactly.
And I mean, this is really insidious as well. I think, you know, what I'd like to mention at this point is, you know, one of the key factors, and this has come up again very recently, when we talk about the connection between the events of 9/11 and the energy phenomenon, which has become known as cold fusion, and I don't really want to go into the details of that, but we've already mentioned this, and it's the connection between the events of 9/11 and energy. We've already talked about directed energy, and Dr. Woods discussed that at some length before, and it's in her book. And again, it's one of those things that nobody can really kind of grasp straight away, the connection between 9/11 and energy. And I'm not talking about, you know, how much oil there is in the Middle East and in Saudi Arabia and that type of energy situation. This is energy that's been used as a weapon,
right,
and used to destroy the World Trade Center. And we've seen that there is this connection. So, you know, it's not really totally clear what it is or why it is. But we can see, for example, that Stephen E. Jones, the physicist from Brigham Young University, he used to do research in the field of cold fusion. He was working on that in the mid-80s. And then he was instrumental in this kind of cover-up stroke muddle-up campaign of the early 90s, which ended up with Pons and Fleischmann, you know, the research chemists who discovered or rediscovered this phenomenon of low-energy nuclear reactions. He was involved with all of that, and then Stephen E. Jones appears in 2005 in the scene of 9/11 research, and I was taken in by him, as I've written in quite some length. But it wasn't until about a year later that I found out that he was actually involved in cold fusion. And one of the important factors appears to be this thing called tritium, which was found in anomalous quantities in the water near the destruction of the World Trade Center around that time in a scientific sampling that was done there. It was also found in these Pons and Fleischmann experiments, and in neither case it shouldn't have been there, or at least not in the quantities that they found it in.
And also the rising dust, you know, suspicion of helium or something like that in the process.
Right, yeah, and yeah, so there could have been the formation of helium, which is also potentially one of the things which may have happened in small quantities in these experiments. So what I'm saying is that I would say that we're starting to get a bit of a glimpse into this other physics, this other science, which clearly somebody, we don't know who it is, knows how to engineer. So it's very important that people, we know that it's very important that people get an understanding of this, because I experienced very recently, and I don't know whether Dr. Wood and yourself discussed this, somebody was writing to me about my book, 9/11 Finding the Truth, in which I document essentially how I came into contact with Dr. Wood. And, you know, the scholars group was set up, the 9/11 scholars group was set up, and then it broke up, and then we had Jim Fetzer, he had one group, and Steve Jones had this other group, and then we had the architects and engineers group set up and such. And I've written about that at quite some length, you know, almost ad nauseam. And about a month ago, I think it was now, I had a lady called Caroline Louise wrote to me claiming that she was interested in the, you know, what happened with the scholars group and what happened with the 9/11 truth movement and blah, blah, blah. And she said she wanted to get both sides of the story. And I thought, well, what sides, you know, because I've actually...
Yeah, truth doesn't have sides.
Yeah. I've actually put, you know, exactly, and she was going on and on and on about this, but I thought, well, so what? Yeah, all the stuff that I've written is all there for you to take a look at.
And your book is free for download. It's not like you have to go out and purchase it.
Exactly, and it's an audio book. So she could just read that, and then if she had any questions, she can ask me those specific questions. But the point I was trying to get to was, she said she was writing about the scholars group, right? But then subsequent emails that I received were asking about Steve Jones. And she specifically asked me about three articles which weren't in the book and were not written by me and were about Stephen E. Jones. So I could clearly see that she was somehow, for some reason, concerned about the information that I had on my website about Stephen E. Jones, which of course goes right back to this energy connection. That's what she was concerned about, and I've written all this up in an article which people can read. It's on the recent postings side of my website. But what I wanted to point out was a couple of things. That just shows you how important this energy connection is, because the number of people that are looking at this in the way that I'm describing and understanding it is very small. It's very, very small. You know, you look at all the 9/11 research websites and all the 9/11 stuff that's published, and you'll probably find perhaps four or five websites in the whole wide world which are discussing the cold fusion issue in connection to the 9/11 issue. We could, Dr. Wood and I, if we sat down right now, we could probably name all of the people who have written those articles, and it's probably going to be less than 10 people in the whole world.
Here's a challenge for the listener. If you have a website, post one of these articles on your website and then see how quickly you'll get an email telling you that you're discrediting yourself and you better take it down.
Sure.
Yeah.
That happens pretty quickly.
Sure. And this lady that was basically on a fishing expedition to you, Andrew,
mm-hmm.
To figure out what your stance was, even though it was quite obvious in your book what your stance was,
right.
And And when Dr. Wood was at a conference, and I can't remember which conference this was, you showed a photo or a video. Actually, it was a video of a meeting where Dr. Stephen Jones attended. He was on the podium there with five or six other gentlemen. They were voting, if we can say voting, on the truth. They were trying to decide about Fleischman, about cold fusion. Could you just elaborate on that, Dr. Wood?
Yes, it's this segment from 1989. I forget the exact date. Andrew probably knows it, March or April in 1989, where Stephen Jones held this vote for science. Let's see if we can vote against, you know, totally, Fleischman's totally bogus, we can ignore him, right? And everybody puts their hand up. Stephen Jones initially puts his hand up, and people, without even thinking, just their hand goes up. Okay, cold fusion's dead. Let's move on. We finished
it
off.
I mean, what that vote, I think, was on was Jones was encouraging the other scientists to vote whether Pons and Fleischman had
discovered anything relative, worthwhile,
important.
It was specifically, it gets a little bit technical, but it was specifically whether Pons and Fleischman had discovered a different way of doing what's called deuterium fusion, which is a doorway to make it, to getting energy, right? So they were voting on whether this particular effect had taken place in Pons and Fleischman's experiment. That was apparently what this vote was about, according to Jones. But the thing was that I think there's probably only one or two of this group of scientists have actually done their own experiments to try and reproduce it, which they could have done. If they wanted to actually verify what Pons and Fleischman had done, they could have got the kit together, and it wasn't particularly unique. You could probably get it for a couple of $1,000s, but they would have had that in their research budgets if they chose to do that.
But at that time, Pons and Fleischman had just rolled it out, and they're kind of pressured into rolling it out.
And then
others hadn't had the opportunity to try it yet.
Sure. Right, and then also about a year after Pons and Fleischman actually suggested it might be fusion, they ended up withdrawing that claim because they'd done further experiments which showed that it couldn't actually be fusion. It was some other nuclear effect that was going on, but they didn't really understand what it was. And I think even now they don't understand what it is. But it is real. It's a real effect. And Jones has claimed subsequently that I and Dr. Wood have attacked him because we've actually just been describing that to the public. You know, just that description you've given me right there. We've been putting that information out to the public to illustrate, as I said earlier, that Jones was involved in cold fusion, and he was involved in cold fusion research,
and he was involved
in 9/11 research.
And the term cold fusion.
Yeah, exactly. I've got an audio of him saying that. And with all my articles on my website, the same is true of that one. I just put down what people have actually said, and I point out that it seems to be relevant, to this or that or the other thing, and I show the evidence for that.
Sure.
And I haven't said, well, Jones is obviously, sabotaging cold fusion. I've got an article by somebody else on my website who said that, but I've never accused Jones of sabotaging cold fusion as such. I've said that he kept the phenomenon covered up, and I think what he did was wrong, but I don't think I've said anything other than that. Yet he gets away with, accusing, yeah, and he goes round saying that Dr. Wood's research is about space beams, and that would be like me going around, or us going around, saying, oh, yeah, that's Stephen E. Jones. He said that the World Trade Center was blown up with dynamite, and he doesn't say that.
Or it was blown up with fairy dust.
Yeah, or it was blown up with fairy dust, and he doesn't say that. He says thermite, but we can report accurately what he said. In other words, that he has this idea that thermite was used. I mean, it's clearly ridiculous when you look at it, but at least we report accurately what he says.
Sure.
And we don't say, oh, yeah, he says dynamite or, whatever. So
it's really obvious in the video, when you see the video, which you showed Dr. Wood at this conference, that he put his hand up, then he looked to his left and looked to his right as if to say, well, come on, guys,
yeah,
get your hands up. It's very obvious that there was some intimidation, silent intimidation, to vote with Dr. Jones. And
people tend to go with the flow without thinking, and I think that's why I felt compelled to show it there, because this is it was at the meeting on new energy, and you know, let's not let this happen again. Let's think before we vote.
Sure.
That was what I was really trying to emphasize, and I ended my presentation with saying, you know, we don't need history to repeat.
No,
let's learn from it. Let's learn from it, and not just, you know, because that held it off still it has a bad rap, even though there was a 60 Minutes presentation by Scott Pelley where he actually interviewed Fleischman, and he says, any regrets?
Mm-hmm.
He says, letting my competitor call it cold fusion.
Ah, yes.
That's what Fleischman is quoted as saying, which contradicts pretty much what Jones has said. And I know who I believe on that one,
sure.
You know. And of course, Fleischman has passed on now. He passed on, I think, last year, just I think about 18 months ago, late 2012. I forget the exact date. I think it was
in August, I think.
Sure.
Was it right? Yeah. So he, you know, he's no longer with us, and sadly, another cold fusion researcher of great, record was John Bockris, who also took forward. He took forward the cold fusion research, and he was investigated by the university for doing so for 11
months.
He's
the one who discovered tritium.
Yeah, he reproduced the tritium, and then he also reproduced this other important effect, which is called transmutation, which is where you get new metal, you know, new elemental metal forming within the cell, you know, so you get copper coming in where there was only palladium before. And, of course, they couldn't tell anyone about that because that was alchemy, you know, and they were accused of all kinds of nonsense because of that. But that's what they found in their experiment, and so did other people. And it appears that this effect is also important in some of the physical evidence at the World Trade Center, this possible transmutation of elements and ongoing effects and so on.
Sure. We did have a couple questions in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could I'll ask them. Bombs were reported going off before the first plane hit and before the first building was brought down. Mm-hmm.
Hang on. Bombs weren't reported. The sound of explosions were reported.
Okay.
If somebody saw a bomb in front of them, they would have been blown up.
See how you are.
See, just see, somebody hears the sound of it doesn't equal what they've imagined caused it.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a question that comes up a lot, actually.
Sure.
And it's a valid question. And I think the first thing, as Dr. Wood pointed out, you know, we've said this before, that not everything that goes boom is a bomb, you know.
Sure.
If you put an egg in a microwave, I think it's the analogy that we've used before, and you switch the microwave on, you'll hear a boom, but you didn't put a bomb in there. And to get to possible explanations for the explosive sound, one of the things which is reported and is not commonly known of is the exploding oxygen tanks on the so-called Scott packs, which are actually on the back of the fire trucks away from the towers a few yards distant. These things were exploding spontaneously on the backs of the trucks. Yeah,
some were in ambulances too, at ground level.
So what would have caused that? Well, if you study the evidence that's in Dr. Wood's book and on the website and in the videos, whichever you feel free to study, you will see that the Hutchison effect has the effect of weakening metal or making it fracture or turn to jelly even. So if you imagine this metal weakening, well, what's going to happen with metal weakening or fracturing on a pressurized tank? Well, guess what? It's going to explode, isn't it, when you've got high pressure inside.
It's like a balloon sitting on a puddle of acid.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So that, you know, and think of all the fire extinguishers that were in the tower. They probably had 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 fire extinguishers in those buildings. Think of a few of those going off, or even one going off, and exploding because the tank had weakened and the pressure was getting out. So I would contend, I don't know if we've got, unless Dr. Wood's going to correct me, I don't know if we've got any witness accounts from inside the towers of saying, exploding Scott pack. But if there was a fire truck parked at the side and one of these Scott packs goes off, and somebody's around the other side of the tower, they might think the explosion has come from inside the tower, you know, when it's actually from a fire truck around the corner.
There's nothing inside identified as exploding that I'm aware of, but there was identification of the building turning to dust internally before it, its final demise by somebody who was able to get out by the skin of their teeth.
Right. Now, there's also some indication, according to someone in the chat room, that all of the glass in the lobby was blown out. And they said that this is shown on the video, and I asked what video and who created the video.
The glass was shattered in the lobby from what I've seen, some of it, not all of it, but some of it. And also witnesses who are evacuating, you know, civilians, described the marble on the side of the staircase entering the lobby was crumbling off the walls.
Yes.
But we also know that on the face of the WFC buildings, that's the World Financial Center buildings across the street, all the marble facade went missing. I mean, it just crumbled off, apparently.
Amazing.
So it's material specific. And the vehicles, of course, the window glass crumbled off of those. And we don't see any trace of the toilets or urinals or anything, which should be about 3,000.
Absolutely. And people can see this, the things that you're talking about. In fact, if you will go to, or if you will visit drjudywood.com/WTC and just scroll down just a bit past the past A, destruction of WTC1, you will see a list of, you'll see first shortcuts and index, and in B, you will see some of the principal data that must be explained. And there is a 41 numbers, 41 sentences, 41 issues that she addresses. And, I mean, it's just very interesting. One of the things that people have accused you of, and I just think it's amazing.
She has no evidence.
and yes. But one of the things that you have said is, do you think those who planned 9/11 forgot to plan a cover-up? And do you think that those in charge of the cover-up would allow a large organization to pursue what happened unobstructed if they were on the right track? And you are being accused of destroying the truth movement. And it's so crazy because...
Little old me, one person.
One person. And you are the object of... Well, you've done a lot of research, but yet you're the object of questionable, intense criticism from the very people who should be anxious to see what you've done. And what well-organized agency is behind such venom? Certainly it's not spontaneous. I mean, right. Thousands of people throughout the Internet aren't all of a sudden going to spontaneously attack you.
No one has refuted anything I've presented. They've put out false propaganda and refuted their own false propaganda, like space beams. I don't present space beams, so... You know, so what they're refuting is what Stephen Jones and others have stated I said, but it's not what I said. And so if you start, you know, well so-and-so said, you know, I could say Stephen Jones said it was fairy dust and then go refute fairy dust. But I don't do that. And as Andrew pointed out when I made that comment, he said, yeah, people who are interested in the truth don't do things like that.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Absolutely, of course. You've been accused of assuming other people's name on the Internet and then doing all kinds of weird things. I mean, people are making all sorts of accusations. They're not addressing what you have stated. They are just creating issues that are totally irrelevant without addressing what you have stated as evidence, empirical evidence.
I mean, I'd like to make a couple of points as well on that, because again, if people were to read the book that I've put together, which you can get from, if you go to tinyurl.com/911 digits, that is FTB, you can download that from that page for your Kindle or your iPad or whatever. And it's an audio book as well that somebody essentially did for me. But I, you know, people can think that that's about so-called infighting. That's what it might look like. And it's unfortunate that if somebody is trying to cover up what you know is true or mischaracterize it, you have a choice. You can either sit back and do nothing, or you can actually point out what they're up to. And some people think it's divisive when you're trying to focus on what these people are doing and possibly what their motives might be. But I, you know, I took that decision to do it, and I've continued to do it. And people have, a few people have written to me and said, yeah, I get it now, I understand it. And I think that takes you back to the planning cover-up. The cover-up, it's huge, it's enormous. It's just mind-boggling. And I say to people, you know, what I'm going to tell you, if I was to sit down with you and talk about what I found out regarding 9/11 and Dr. Wood's research in the last, really 6 to 10 years, you would, even a conspiracy theorist would not believe it. You know, that's what I tell people. And I myself, you know, I got to know this chap in 2006 called Ian Henshall, and I took him to be an honest guy, you know, and he was trying to find the truth about 9/11. He runs a website called reinvestigate911.org. You will not find one link, not one reference to Dr. Wood's book or her court case or anything like that, or my website. And I've had a few email exchanges with him over the last few years, and he wrote to me last year, 2012 actually, late 2012, and he said, just in case you don't realise, this is Ian Henshall writing to me, and this is a direct quote, you were personally the biggest single cause of the collapse of the 9/11 truth campaign in the UK. That's what he wrote in email to me.
Powerful, Andrew. Oh,
just like
goodness.
People say, I broke up the scholars group.
That's
few
ridiculous.
People realize, yeah. Morgan Reynolds and I resigned in August 17th, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
The divorce between Fetzer and Jones was in December.
Right, it was. I remember.
And it was, Morgan and I started posting actual evidence into October and so forth. And I presented some of my work at the National Press Club in early September, thanks to Morgan. Morgan has done the most for me. And while I was there, there was someone who met me who got me on Ambrose Lane's radio show. And Ambrose Lane has done more for getting my information out there than anyone. And, it, you know, then putting up the website and so forth, it was starting to gain momentum, and to distract away from it, it appears that they had this divorce, you know, and big spit fight, and people looked at the spit fight instead of the evidence I was presenting.
Well, I note, I was a member. I was a lesser member of that group. And of course, everybody had to be vetted to be in the group. But the forum was very, very well monitored. I never got to post anything on the forum because, well, it was moderated to the point that, what was the point of trying to post anything?
Mm-hmm.
That was my views of it.
Right.
Dr. Wood, how many times have you appeared on any of the Fox News or any of the other mainstream media television programs?
Zero.
Hmm.
And look what happened to Jesse Ventura for having me on his show, or trying to have me on his show.
Hmm. Where is he now?
Yeah, his show was canceled. Not only that, the show on 9/11 that he had me on for got turned into this total nonsense thing.
Sure.
But they didn't put words in my mouth that weren't there, which was thankful.
Well,
he just chopped it down to nothing. So he was very respectful of me.
Sure. I was watching, well, I rewatched a video over the weekend. In fact, this person actually incorporated some of your diagrams into her video. She did mention your name, which was, well, it was good of her to do that. I don't think she probably got permission to use your stuff. But I was watching it, and in the video it showed the angle cut column, and then you have asked previously, Which column do you cut that causes the building to turn to powder in midair?
Yeah, you look at the picture on the cover of my book and then get out your hacksaw. Which you know, column are you going to cut? What does that have to do with what happened to buildings? And this is something, you know, there's people with an opinion and an internet connection who believe that makes them an expert. And there's this new trend towards just having an opinion. You don't need to even go to elementary school. You can just declare yourself an expert and
sure.
Look at whatever website you do on the internet and reproduce it over and over again without understanding what you're doing. But the thing about being an expert in forensic science and forensic engineering is knowing how to approach a problem. To first look at the evidence. What does the evidence tell you?
Sure.
And you don't start out with, you know, how it was done. How it was done before you define what it is. And so you have this cut column. You need to have a connection between that cut column and what happened to the building.
Sure.
The same with a dust baggie. You know, how does that dust baggie explain what happened to the building? The building turned mainly into dust in midair. Well, of course, then a dust baggie is going to contain all the constituents of what was in.
Sure. The thing that is so compelling to me is the seismic graphs and the fact that if it had collapsed, if buildings had collapsed, as they imply, as they suggest repeatedly, there would have been horrible damage done to the bathtub, and that just was not the case at all.
Yeah, the bathtub was a dike that held out the Hudson River. It was built around the towers because the towers were on bedrock that was 70, that's 7 times 10, 70 feet below the water table. And the bathtub was not ruptured with the supposed demise and with bombs, explosives, and material crashing down. You know, that pretty much rules out any kind of kinetic energy being involved.
Such as a bomb, yes. The other thing, too, that just struck me is the fact that just using logic and common sense, if these 19 Arabs with box cutters actually perpetrated this event, and wouldn't they want to make as much damage as possible? And if they did, in fact, use bombs or whatever, or planes or missiles or whatever, wouldn't they have wanted to rupture the bathtub and flood the entire, the paths, trainways, and the subway and all that stuff?
Well, if you want maximum damage, yeah, tip the buildings over and you take out all southern Manhattan, including flooding it.
Exactly. So it wasn't damage that they were after. It was something else.
Yeah,
who knows what
was
else?
After. Right. I'd like to read a quote by Michael Ober, an EMT. He says, "I don't remember the sound of a building hitting the ground. Someone told me that it was measured on the Richter scale. I don't know how true that is. If the building's hitting the ground that hard, how do I not remember the sound of it?" I mean, he was right there.
Ah, yes, and I think that some of the videos that people made, they actually added explosion sounds just to be deceptive and to promote that idea that it was a collapse.
Yeah, I think there was definitely one video where I saw, and I was sure that had a, because it was a really loud explosive sound on it, and just the way it was put in, I think it was one of these that was meant to be just near building number 7. That was a good few years ago that I saw that video, and I was immediately suspicious of it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I'd just like to mention about truth movements as well, or the truth movement, whatever that is, you know, and we've both been accused of, dividing the truth movement or damaging it or whatever it is. Well, let's just consider that expression truth movement. So where exactly would people like the truth to be moved to exactly? You know, over into this little corner where nobody can see it, which is essentially what they've tried to do, because they've established this truth movement to move the truth out of view. That's what the truth movement has done, certainly in relation to the events of the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Sure.
That's what happened. So truth doesn't really need a movement. The truth needs to be spoken of. It doesn't actually need a movement. You need to be looking at the evidence to establish what the truth is. And the moment that you start to move away from that process, is that's when you start to help the truth to be covered up.
Sure. Speaking of evidence, somebody in the chat room said, the funniest thing about the guests' argument is that they want us to believe something that is contrary to the evidence. All of the evidence, visual, audible, chemical, mathematical, eyewitness, and dozens of pieces of circumstantial evidence. I'm not sure. Are these two just using the 9/11 incident to air their own personal interest in alternative energy, or do they actually have some tangible evidence?
Well, apparently they haven't looked at my website or my book or listened to my presentations.
Exactly.
Which can be found on my website, drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com. If you go there, the first thing you see is a video. Watch that video and you see evidence.
Well, I mean, what people like that could do if they want is they could, click on the video and then they could stick their fingers in their ears and put their hands over their eyes. And then say, oh, I can't see any evidence here. Or they could buy a book and then not read it or not take responsibility for reading it. I mean, even this Jim Fetzer character, he actually admitted on his Amazon review he hadn't actually read the book. So if you're not actually going to look at the evidence, then, you know, you can declare that there is none because you haven't actually, it hasn't actually come into your awareness.
Sure.
So the only way that whoever made that statement can be making it legitimately is that they have not actually looked. Now, however, if they have some problem with understanding the evidence and they don't see the connections that we've spoken of or have reason to disbelieve what we've actually been presenting with, you know, to them now or, you know, since, to pick a date, 2006, 2008, if they have reason to disbelieve those presentations, then say what that reason is, rather than just accusing us of not actually presenting any evidence.
Sure. This person also said, give you this one more comment, and I quote, the whole 9/11 truth movement started when people realized that they were looking at a controlled demolition and not a pancake collapse. But they were told what they were looking at on that date, 9/11. They were told.
In the so-called truth movement, they were also told, this is what you shall say. Here are the talking points. And they're issued talking points that they repeat over and over again, like steel-toed boots melting. All the steel shipped to China, they're given all these talking points that they're to memorize. And, in my book, I don't tell people what to believe. I've just collected the evidence for them to look through and figure out for themselves.
There's a couple of points I'd like to make in response to that as well. Firstly, I was taken in by the controlled demolition ideas and hypothesis and alleged evidence. I was taken in by that, and I've written about that. And so people can go and read about that if they wish. And, again, it comes back to this idea of truth. I think one of the rules for speaking about, you know, what happened on 9/11 and telling people what you know is you shouldn't say anything that is knowingly untrue, right? And if you accidentally say something which is untrue and somebody then corrects you on that, you should take that correction forwards and use that corrected information the next time you speak about it. So, for example, when Steve Nee Jones says that Dr. Wood had talked about space beams, that is not true. So if he is interested in the truth of what happened to 9/11, the second time he spoke about that, he should have said, oh, no, she didn't say space beams. She actually said directed energy weapon. Sorry, I made a mistake. So people like him, and, for example, you could probably say the same as Richard Gage, they are speaking untruthfully, because they are not accurately reporting what has been said, all right? So that is one of my fundamental principles that for judging how people are actually dealing with the truth of what the evidence shows. If they're going to make stuff up, you know, I've encountered this and I've written several articles about it, and I can prove that people have made stuff up and they've been corrected and then they've continued with the untruthful statements. So if you want the truth movement, essentially, you know, even though I've said that it's probably not a good thing, but if you want to be in a truth movement, you have to speak the truth. And if you make a mistake, you should correct it.
And in my professional world that I come from, if someone presented bogus data or data they made up or said something about another researcher that was untrue, their reputation would be toast for the rest of their life. Their career is toast. Because
sure.
That they've now, you know, taught everyone not to listen to what they say. I don't know when that changed, you know, for the truther movement, but it's not the way professionals carry on.
Indeed, but on the internet you can do that because if you say something under one name, you just adopt another name and build another website and become an expert in something else or maybe the same thing. Who knows?
That's another reason why anonymous posting is irrelevant, because they don't have a reputation to hold on to answer to.
And I think that, you know, all this, that brings up the other issue of the way that internet forum noise is generated, and much of it, not all of it, but much of it is anonymous. So when people use the appropriate search terms, they come up with all this nonsense. Some of it can be quite well written, you know, it has good grammar, good sort of phrasing, and it sounds authoritative, but you don't really know what the motivation of the person is writing. You don't really know what their background is. So it can look and sound pretty convincing, but most of the time you don't even know who you're talking to. And you know, this is exactly why I put all my contact details on my website, and I encourage people to ring me up and ask me questions. Because at least then, you know, they've got an opportunity to grill me and see if I pass their grilling. You know, actually, it doesn't happen very often. I get very few people actually ever ringing me up or, you know, contacting me. Occasionally I do, and for the most part, when they contact me and I provide them with some information, they're usually happy with that, you know. But when you go on a forum, you can just get anybody coming on there, and years ago, I don't know when it was, but I call it the culture of anonymity. The culture of anonymity was created, and people, even honest, you know, people with good intentions, they just seem to follow that culture of anonymity, and they won't use their real name, you know, they won't post any details about themselves and so on. So that has been a huge problem in actually allowing this situation of the internet connection and an opinion to become the truth.
Absolutely.
There's a huge problem. It's not just with 9/11, of course. A lot of the other topics that I know you discuss on your programs, you can say the same thing about, you know.
You have this consensus thinking, and you also have mob censure. In other words, if you post something that the group in the forum disagrees with, eat you alive.
It's a logical fallacy to say that, you know, let people say, well, so many people, you know, the majority of people say that Dr. Buddha is bogus. Well, science isn't determined by popularity. You know,
sure.
I think with Gandhi, who said even, you know, the truth is still the truth, even if just adhered to by, you know, minority of one.
Certainly.
And as I think the other thing on top of all of that is it almost goes back to what the very negative poster was saying a few minutes ago that you read now, you know, saying no evidence. That what comes out of this is very, very uncomfortable, not only because of the, you know, the horrible, you know, murder of these people and all of those horrible things, but we hear all this talk, you know, things like climate change and, you know, our irresponsible use of energy and all of this stuff, you know. But what 9/11 reveals is that it's actually far worse than that, because we have a solution to those problems already, or somebody has a solution to those problems. Not we don't have it. We're subject to control by the people that have that solution for themselves. So that is also an uncomfortable reality to have to deal with on top of everything else. And I think that's one of the sort of psychological barriers to people really getting a handle on this, because it goes against almost everything that they've encountered up to the point that they discover that this is all real, and they realize that
Santa Claus exists.
Yeah.
No, Santa Claus exists. I want Santa Claus. Santa Claus exists. No, I'm not going to hear you.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of putting it. When you realize something is not real, this is kind of almost the reverse of that. You know, you realize something is real.
Want it to be true. You want Santa Claus to be real, so you have to reject reality. And those are the enemy who speak of you know, not Santa Claus.
And it changes the whole geopolitical paradigm completely, and that's why I think it's been covered up so comprehensively.
Sure.
I've got an interesting perspective on that. I've been looking into this further and realized that, you know, when did my differences first show up? Right from the get-go. Because I didn't watch TV and so forth either. But I would notice things that my colleagues wouldn't notice. And I wonder if there's a lot that has been implanted, you know, rah, 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 we're the greatest country in the world. America wouldn't do anything to their citizens. They're great. We're lucky to be in the greatest country in the world. And I was, remember this particular day in third grade, the Weekly Reader, you know, this child's
mm-hmm.
newspaper,
mm-hmm.
It had this story about big bad Russians selling propaganda to their citizens. And I raised my hand and said, how do we know this itself isn't propaganda to us? And the entire class, as well as the teacher, laughed at me. For asking that, like, how dare you ask that? We're in America, the greatest country in the world. They were already, you know, hoodwinked into that.
Wow.
It's just like a belief in Santa Claus, that they aren't seeing reality. They have this belief system. And I think it's so important to see the world as a child before that age. You know, what did you yourself think of the world as a child before it was contaminated and limited to what you were told you're supposed to see and think? And it's important. But also with regard to, you know, those who, like that last comment that you'd read, you have to ask what the objective is. Is it to find out what happened on 9/11, or is it to cover it up and divert away from what happened on 9/11? Would there be so much anger and hostility directed at both me and Andrew if someone was really interested in determining what happened?
I think, you know, there may be also be an element that person had come to the conclusion that what they'd already discovered was true. And there's a bit of kind of difficulty there in accepting that they could have been fooled twice. You know, I had a bit of difficulty accepting that first. You know, you kind of think, oh, well, I'm smarter than everybody else because I've sussed out that 9/11 was controlled demolition and it wasn't anything to do with Al-Qaeda. It was some other agency that did it. And then somebody else comes along and says, no, it wasn't controlled demolition. It was actually some type of directed energy weapon. And they'll go, oh, what's that? And so, you know, maybe that person is still stuck in that part mm-hmm. of the process, as it were, whatever you want to call it.
I like that mm-hmm. Mark Twain quote you have.
Well, it was alleged to be, yeah, you can read it out if you want, but it was alleged to be Mark Twain. I was looking into this, and it wasn't. Yeah, I don't think it was actually him, but yeah, go on. That's perhaps an appropriate point.
Why don't you read it?
Well, the Mark Twain quote, which was, well, attributed to Mark Twain, but I couldn't find out where he wrote it, is it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled. And I think that's
true.
Well,
people don't like to, they like to be popular, they like to be part of the group, and when you step outside of that group, it's a very lonely position, I think. And of course, there has been a lot of so-called pseudo-scientific philosophers who know nothing about science, who people seem to give more credibility to than somebody that actually knows what they're talking about, such as Dr. Wood.
Oh, right. I mean, you know, credentialism can be a huge problem in this area. You know, and somebody with claimed credentials, you know, who can talk well, can you know, appear to be convincing. But sadly, these people appear not to want the truth to come out. They appear to be happier to help keep a, you know, huge horrible crime covered up, and so on. And that's what appears to happen.
Yes, very interesting. All righty. Getting back to this demolition idea, the idea that people said, well, Danny Jawenko, who said that that Building 7 was demolished, and that the person said Danny Jawenko was murdered for his knowledge of WTC 7. Now, how do we know that was why he was murdered? If he was murdered,
right?
Yeah, was he murdered? And where's the proof to that claim? It's a claim that somebody's put out there, and a claim is not evidence.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. Unless they can show some kind of documentation, it just remains as a possibility. It might be true, it may not be true. So people, you know, shouldn't confuse the two. They shouldn't confuse, you know, supposition and speculation with what evidence actually shows, you know, and what evidence there is to support a conclusion, as I try and say.
The evidence about Building 7 is that it was even quieter than the demise of the two towers. And the amount that the ground shook that was recorded by the seismic station was basically the equivalent of a jackhammer. It's a 47-story building. It was six times the potential energy of the King Dome, the Seattle King Dome. Yet Seattle King Dome made a 2.3 when it was blown up. The Building 7 made a 0.6. on the equivalent on the Richter scale, and none of the events on 9/11, the five events, you know, the three buildings and the two supposed holes in the building, you know, plane-shaped holes, none of those had a detectable S or P wave. That's a signal that travels through the Earth. So how could you have buildings slamming to the ground or blowing up with bombs if there's no signal that traveled through the Earth, only a surface wave, which is what you would get if you just lifted the building up and turned it to dust.
Mm-hmm. So people have been told for years and years that Building 7 was a controlled demolition, and Larry Silverstein announced that it was a controlled demolition, and of course we're going to believe that. And so...
Is he a scientist? Does he have a career on the line?
This is an anon. So, the controlled demolition. When would they have planted all of these the charges that would have made it a controlled demolition?
Doesn't matter if it has charges or not. There's no evidence to support charges. But even more importantly, if it's a controlled, you know, in controlled demolitions, they remove everything that isn't nailed down, plus everything that is nailed down, any partitioning walls, everything, because when the thing blows up, anything in there becomes a projectile, which means they have to remove all the windows. And of all the video footage, I've not seen any removed windows. And because those window glass would become projectiles and decapitate people in the area. And that didn't happen. The adjacent building was machine gun fired, and that didn't happen. So the building was not prepared for demolition, as can be observed by no missing windows.
And again, the sound issue is not only the one. Again, if you go and watch those videos of the alleged controlled demolition of Building Number 7, you won't hear the characteristic
bang, bang, bang.
You know,
sure.
The building actually, as it goes down or goes away, perhaps more accurately, can be confused with what seems to happen
in the initial part.
Yeah. But
as it goes down further, you can see all this froth, you know, lather coming out from every which way.
Sure.
Yeah, and also, you know, the actual sound of it going to the ground, if it had all been chopped up into chunks, you know, if they'd somehow managed to rig this so that the sections of the building were chopped up by these alleged charges, then the sound of those, you know, bashing against each other as it came to the ground would be very, very loud. Very, very loud.
Like raining dump trucks.
Yeah, because you're in a confined space. You know, this wasn't like in an open area. This was among a group of other buildings. And any sound of that going bang, bang, bang as it was coming down, all the bits hitting against each other would have echoed off all the surrounding buildings. So you would have been an enormous racket. And even the NIST report, the official NIST report said it was, I forget, can you remember the exact phrase they used?
I don't remember, but it was essentially whisper quiet, but that word. They talked about, actually, one of the particular videos where someone is being interviewed. This woman's being interviewed, and I've seen the video. Right behind her, you see the building start to drop, and I don't know if it's the interviewer or the cameraman or one the same, where the building, as it starts to go down, the guy says, whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, because there's no indication. I mean, you hear voices down the street talking, you know, conversations.
Yeah.
But you don't hear any bang, 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 bang.
Unless it was added to a video that somebody created. Somebody in the chat room said that there were crews going into the towers. Hang on, I'm just typing a question to this person.
Okay.
He said, but there were crews going into the two towers for months prior to 9/11, arriving in white vans through the night. And what I said was, how do you know there were crews going into the buildings?
Here's a thought. There's 25,000 people that worked in that building. I suspect there were people coming and going from the building all the time. And delivery trucks, you know, from FTD floors or whatever.
Sure.
I think if I can highlight that particular point and make a comparison, right? So, for example, Dr. Wood has pointed out that the seismic signature of Building 7. I know the person wasn't specifically talking about Building 7 there, but I'm going to get back to that. And she has the seismic records from USGS to show that that is true. She has pictures of parts of the destruction of the World Trade Center 7. She has witness testimony from videos and from the NIST reports and so on. That person talking about these people going into the building, does he have, you know, these teams, does he have photographs of them going into the building? Does he have photographs of the vans? Does he have written witness testimony with named people on it, with email addresses or phone numbers? I mean, you know, some of the accounts that we've got are not under oath, but they are at least, we know who said them, and people can go and look at them on the New York Times website and other places. You know, so that person who said that, we need a reference for that information as much as he's got, whether, you know, who said it, where, which person gave that testimony, when it was recorded. You know, because all of the things that we said, we can actually show you why and how we've come to those statements, right? And that's the difference between evidence and speculation.
Exactly. And that is so true. And people trust speculation more than they do science. And I just have to look at the science. And it's just compelling beyond any speculation could possibly be.
I need to be sarcastic here. But we can speculate. There are people changing light bulbs in the elevators. We need to investigate those people who are changing the light bulbs just in case they had something to do with something that we imagined.
Sure. And it's just, you have to look at the evidence. Cause and effect, yes. It just boggles my mind that people are willing to listen to rumor and to speculation and to ideas presented by people who have absolutely no knowledge of science or how it works. And it just irritates me too.
But there's a reason for this. You know, the way to solve a crime is you first have to determine what it was that happened, and only then can you determine how it was. You have to determine what it is first before you determine how it was, because if you start out with how it was done, you have to imagine what it is. So you're solving an imaginary problem. But the way to run a cover-up is to get people to argue about how it was done. They each imagine a different it that happened, And they argue round, and they'll never, ever, ever solve what happened unless they first start out with what it was that happened. And so it's an excellent way to cover things up.
And people don't have to purchase your book to get an idea of what the evidence is. All they have to do is visit your website, particularly the one, drjudywood.com/WTC. Just scroll down to B and look at the 41 issues that you address. And then make a decision. And then reevaluate and separate what you have presented from what they've been told. And we've been told so frequently. It is like if you hear it 100 times, it must be true. But that is not the case.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say was essentially, and I know that some people don't have, you know, some people access the internet from a public library, so they might only get an hour at a time or something, whatever it is. Or
get the book through the library.
Well, yes, that's the one thing they can do, get a book through the library. But I was also going to say that I send out DVDs free, you know, because I do get people actually sending me small donations from my website, and I use those to send out DVDs free of charge to anybody that asks for them, you know, and I haven't had like huge numbers, so it's been perfectly affordable for me to do that. So if anybody wants videos of Dr. Wood's presentations, I've got several which, you know, well, if you take the time to sit through them, you will see all of this very clearly. So go on to checktheevidence.com and go on to the order DVD, stick an address in there, and I'll send you the DVDs, for heaven's sake. You know, it's that important to me.
That is really great. You've talked about the toasted cars that were on FDR Drive. You talked about the rail lines. You talked about the justification. Even if you just look at those videos and watch things disappear in midair as things are falling down, you can see they just disappear.
Well, they don't disappear. They turn to dust.
Right.
They cease being a rigid object.
See how you are.
I actually get accused of saying that things disappeared, and then you know the trolls say she claimed they disappeared. No, I don't claim they disappeared. They turned into dust. Oh, they magically disappeared. things get twisted around quite easily.
I know, but okay, they turned.
But this is this is a question of logic.
You're so exacting, and that's what I love about you, is that you don't, you know, people who lie and make stuff up have to have really good memories. People who are telling the truth are just always very consistent. You're not going to ever change your story. You're not going to bring
I don't have to retract it.
You don't
anything
have,
I've said.
Exactly.
I haven't had to retract anything I've said.
Exactly, because you're so consistent. You're so consistent.
There's an expression in which... There's an expression which I heard another witness say to an amazing event that had happened to him, and he said, "I only tell it one way because it only happened one way," you know, and that's exactly what it is, you know.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. If you look at the photos right underneath in Figure 3, Figure 4, look at all that paper. Look at the paper strewn about, and
that was right after some big steel beams were, you know, heading toward that intersection as well as heading onto Building 6. And
exactly.
You look in Building 6 as an empty hole.
Sure.
And you don't see them there either.
On number one, the Twin Towers were destroyed faster than physics can explain by a free fall speed collapse.
Note, I did not say fell. I said they were destroyed faster. The ground shook for 8 seconds. It would take 9.5 seconds to throw a bowling ball off the roof and have it hit the ground.
Exactly. And if people scroll down, they will see your BBE, the rate of destruction, the bowling ball example. And this is very compelling. I mean, you cannot argue with what you have presented, either on your website or in your book. It's just not. And no matter how many idiotic things people say about you, no matter how many accusations, no matter how many ridiculous things they say,
doesn't refute the evidence.
It does. You can't. They never talk about this. They never talk about the evidence. They always. It's always a personal, dare I say, ad hominem attack. Yeah, that's what it is.
She's pink with purple polka dots, so don't believe her.
Exactly. Sure. Sure.
Whatever you do, don't believe her. Please, 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 please don't believe her. Oh.
Exactly.
Must be something worth listening to there.
Sure. And if you have so many and it's not spontaneous, it was a deliberate group attack that seemed spontaneous. It seemed to come from various corners, various parties. But it just was, it was just kind of orchestrated, organized, I would say.
And you have to ask, where did Stephen Jones go?
Indeed.
As soon as my book came out, he's nowhere to be seen.
Sure, sure. If we scroll down to age justification, and look at these photos, and look at the figure 46. I mean, that is just incredible. Well, look at 49. Look at how the spire.
Yeah, those core columns, and I think that's the top of stairwell B.
Uh-huh.
Because the people below, that's something that few people mention, is these folks in stairwell B, 14 of them, and plus two above them, where they survived, even though the building around them didn't. But the people in stairwell B looked up and saw sunshine and then walked out on their own.
Yes. How did that happen? If a building had collapsed, how in heaven's name would that have happened?
They weren't crushed and they weren't cooked to death.
Exactly. The building didn't fall on them. Go ahead.
And people say that, all the debris ended up in the basement. Well, how did it get to the basement? Did it take a detour, go up, Church Street and over on VC and down in the ramp into the parking garage? I mean, how did it get to the basement to go through those people?
Right.
Without crushing them.
And I was just going to mention about that particular testimony with the stairwell B folks, and a lot of that is in a video called The Miracle of Stairwell B. That's the actual title. And I was aware of this video. I think it was made 2005 or something, 2004. I can't remember exactly when it was made. And I was I didn't really want to watch it at first because I thought, it's just going to be more propaganda. But I did end up watching it after a period of time.
Made by the BBC, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was made by Channel 4, actually. I think, again, it had the version that I had a British narrator, so I don't know whether it was made by a British production company or whether they just put, a British voiceover for the UK onto it, possibly. But anyway, the testimony that's in there is most compelling. And so I was actually quite glad that I ended up watching that because, I'd known of this through Dr. Wood's evidence that she put together, but to actually hear them describing the events, it just 100% backed up all the other evidence, And this is, again, how this illustrates how a more and more compelling set of evidence has been built up over time. That shows that everything that we're telling you is true.
The folks who were trapped in there thinking that they would be dead by the time anyone could, dig them out because they're in the second, third, and fourth floor of the stairwell. So that meant there's 106 stories above them that was piled up on top of them is what they believed. But when the dust cloud cleared, they looked up. And I'll read the quote by Jay Jonas. He says, "I looked and said, guys, there used to be 106 floors above us, and now I'm seeing sunshine. There's nothing above us. That big building doesn't exist." He later said, "These are the biggest office buildings in the world, and I didn't see one desk or one chair or one phone, nothing."
Huh. Amazing.
So in other words, just to summarize that, we've got seismic evidence that said building didn't hit the ground in solid form. We've got witness testimony evidence that said the building didn't hit the ground in solid form. We've got photographs which show that the building didn't hit the ground in solid form. We've got videos of segments of the steel turning to dust before they hit the ground. Well,
sure.
Looks pretty much to me like the building turned to dust before it hit the ground.
And how else do you get ankle deep or calf deep dust all over southern Manhattan?
Yeah, and how else do you end up with an undamaged bathtub, which you'd mentioned earlier on? Well,
sure.
If a bathtub just has a huge pile of dust falling into it, you know, with most of the rest of the dust, flying off somewhere else, then that's how the bathtub survives and the path train survives. So all of the evidence shows you what happened. And then you can go from showing what happened to, you know, the sorts of things that might have been involved in causing it to happen.
And for those who say that Building 7 looked like a controlled demolition, tipping top of Tower 2, even though it was like 35 stories instead of 47, it's, you know, a similar height, looked just like Building 7. And it tipped over, but it stopped tipping. And it appears to violate the laws of conservation of angular momentum. But it doesn't cease to stick by those rules. What that does is prove that it turned to dust because it quit tipping as a rigid body because it was now a whole bunch of dust particles that were still continuing to rotate.
Okay.
And that's how laws of conservation of angular momentum were not violated there.
Sure. Let me share a couple of comments from the chat room. This is quite spooky, Deanna. The guests are clearly lucid, yet they are trying to dismantle the counter 9/11 theories by replacing physical evidence and eyewitness accounts with a lame fabrication based on sci-fi theories. These two are agents, no doubt. Okay, so you're agents.
Sci-fi theory, are they calling Jay Jonas, the firefighter who survived Chernobyl,
he's an agent too. He must be an
okay.
agent.
Everything's an agent.
That's all we can surmise from that testimony.
If he wants that person, whoever he is, if he can write to me, ad.johnson@ntlworld.com, and he can ask me about my contract, which actually is with the Open University for doing disabled students assessments, and that's all on my website. So, you know, if he wants to find out about that, then I'll tell him everything he wants to know, or she, everything she wants to know, whether it's a male or female, because obviously they don't say. So I really think that that's a kind of a desperate statement, and I don't even know what they're actually trying to, you know, what their counter theories are. And we're not talking about theories, we're actually talking about what actually happened, you know, mainly.
Like I say, you know, if you want to know what happened, you start, how tall somebody is, you start out with a tape measure, not a theory.
Sure.
And what I've done is used what data we do have and do know. I don't fill in the gap with guesses and hypotheses and speculation. That is not scientific.
Sure.
And also they mentioned this phrase science fiction. Well, I'd like to know exactly what science fiction about any you know, thing that we've talked about this afternoon. I can't think of anything that's mentioned that's science fiction. So again, that seems to be another mischaracterization of what's being discussed, and people can listen to the rest of this and decide for themselves whether that's a mischaracterization or not.
Sure.
We know, you know, there's others that talk about science fiction, but, you know, we don't talk about it. Saying that we talk about space beams doesn't mean we do talk about space beams. We haven't.
Sure. You never mentioned space beams, ever.
Right. And that's usually, when people usually say it's science fiction, space beams are science fiction, well, fine, go address the people who told you that.
Sure.
You know, this isn't in my book. No one has found anything in my book that they can take issue with.
Sure. Another question, which you've already answered, what about the firefighters' testimony of explosions? There were many, and you already mentioned the fire...
Exploding tanks, exploding pressurized tanks is the most likely explanation for those things.
There's an EMT who floated down some stairs And the only way she figured how that would fit into her view of the world was she must have died and God carried her downstairs, because how could she have floated down these stairs?
Sure.
So because that's what that firefighter, I mean, that EMT said, does that mean that God carried her downstairs?
Maybe.
Or you know, she was describing what she experienced.
Okay.
But her interpretation of it, that's in her interpretation, but she described what she had actually experienced.
And that's
sure.
actually very similar to the 9/11 surfer that they called him, the Blaze, I can't remember his second name, who came on the television about 18 months ago, didn't he, and told his mm-hmm. account of, he thinks he fell 20 floors, but that seems a bit unlikely. He floated down 20 floors, didn't he? Because he said he was the last that he could remember was on floor 26. And then the next,
or
you know, 2 minutes later, yeah, or 22, and the next minute he was being rescued by firefighters or something at ground level.
But he was he was on top of the stairwell B, you know, right where the hole was, where the people in stairwell B looked up and saw blue sky. He was right on top of that pile of stuff.
Right.
It wasn't smashed, so he's sort of even a more extreme case than the firefighters. He didn't talk about being burnt to death.
No. So in other words, we're talking about corroborating witness testimony of things like levitation and floating around the place, an experience in the building coming apart. All that is in the witness testimony record, and I can send them all the links to the files for that if people want to read it.
Sure. We need to separate interpretations from actual, you know, testimony of what someone experienced.
Sure.
And like one of my favorite examples is Dan Rather. Not Dan Rich, but sorry. Peter Jennings in the studio talking to George Stephanopoulos at the site, where George Stephanopoulos says, well, I'm asking, you know, Peter Jennings says, where'd all the rubble go? Well, George Stephanopoulos says, all fell down into the ground, was pulverized, evaporated. Does that mean he's testified the building evaporated, so therefore that's evidence that it evaporated? No, that's his interpretation of what he sees. He doesn't
sure.
see enough rubble.
Another comment. The firefighters with years of experience knowing what exploding tanks sounded like still said they were explosions.
Right.
Yeah.
You hit poke a balloon with a pin and it explodes. You cook an egg in a microwave and it explodes.
Right. But that doesn't mean that it is a bomb, because bombs
yeah.
are kinetic energy, and they would create a seismic response that would show on a chart.
Right, and none of them describe seeing what, you know, identifying, except for the only things that were identified was a fire truck that blew up and Scott tanks that exploded and things,
sure.
things of that sort.
If people want to actually study I can direct them to all the texts of all the witness accounts, and then they can search for keywords like bomb and see what the firefighters actually said. Rather than claiming that they were describing bombs going off, they can actually do as I did when I started an investigation of the plane stories, and that's in a separate article.
Unless they can identify the bomb, it's an interpretation they've made from the sound they
yeah.
heard.
Right.
So there might have been firefighters saying it sounded like a bomb. The fireman doesn't say, oh yeah, I saw this bomb exploding and I could see that it was a bomb because I've seen a bomb going off and it was just like that. I don't think any of them say anything like that. You know, so people can actually read the accounts if they wish and determine for themselves what they actually said rather than what they think they said.
Sure. Dr. Wood, what kinds of financial sacrifices have you experienced or repercussions for your work?
I like to stay with the evidence.
Okay.
Because
somebody is saying, oh, somebody's paying these two off or something to that.
I can talk from my perspective in that I can do this. I can spend time on this because of the work that I do. The work that I do involves me largely working at home, and I'm my own boss, and I can work to my own timetable. And so I can sort of basically, I've got enough of an income from the work that I do to allow me, and I choose to do this, to spend time on working on this sort of thing that we're doing now, essentially give my time to that. And nobody is paying me to, do this program or to speak up for Dr. Wood or to write the book. I'm not being paid for any of that, right? So I do it because it needs to be done as I see things from my perspective. And again, if people certainly suspect me of anything else, then I encourage them to write to me, and you know, I can provide them with various contacts, such as the place that I work. You know, I can tell you all about that and tell you who to speak to verify that I do work for them. If people wish to do that, I'm quite happy to tell them, you know, so I'll speak to myself on that.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Andrew.
That's okay.
I think that people get so invested in what they believe to be true that even when they are presented with contradictory evidence, evidence that is more compelling, that they are so invested in what they believe. And most people absolutely do not like to feel that they have been duped. So rather than reevaluate what they believe when they are presented with new evidence, they prefer to remain where they're at because, well, it's just more comfortable.
Right.
And Andrew, there's another quote that we've often used that that really, you know, kind of cuts to this also. When people think you make them think, they will like you, but when you really make them think, they will hate you.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. And that's true.
Absolutely. That is.
Here's some testimony from Rene Davila. His boss asked him in this was a what do you call
now,
it?
Who is he?
He was a first responder, an EMT,
okay,
who has sadly since died, but is in the debriefing afterwards, and this is under oath. His boss asked him, you know, about his vehicle. Was it destroyed? And he says, yeah, we were there, and the vehicle was destroyed. And the boss says, was it on fire? And he says, what? Boss then says, well, was it on fire? And he answers, fire? We saw the sucker blow up. We heard a boom. Now, his vehicle, his emergency medical vehicle, exploded. And is another one, another person says, yeah, that's Renee's testimony, but there's other things of explosions and, you know, vehicles flipped upside down, and there's really interesting things that they're, if you listen to what they say, not what you're told to think, but what these people actually say, it's quite revealing. Now, why would the EMT describe his vehicle 219 as going boom? We saw the sucker blow up. We heard a boom.
Indeed.
Yep.
Well, there's a lot of things that that certainly we can't explain, but I do believe in...
Doesn't mean we should ignore them.
Exactly. I do believe in your work. I believe in your book. I've read your book. I've studied your website. I'm not a scientist, but I have common sense, and my common sense tells me that even though this is not the popular way to go, this is the truth.
I like another favorite Mark Twain quote. When you find yourself in the majority, it's a good time to pause and reflect.
Ah, yes. Oh, how true.
Because you get swept up in it, and
sure,
and you start believing what other people tell you to believe rather than what you yourself believe. And I think that is actually one of the most powerful things of my book. I hadn't anticipated that. I was just telling the story. But what I've come to see is that people who are reading it, you know, they're sitting by themselves in their own room, their own space, not being influenced by anyone else. It's just them and the book. They don't have anyone to save face to. They
sure
don't have to defend their ego that they were duped or anything else. And then pretty soon they can see just how much they were duped and learn how to see through it better in the future. And then they feel empowered by the end because they learn how to see what is there rather than what they're told to see is there. And
sure,
that's going to become so important in the near future.
Sure.
We do get people writing to us, or I certainly have people writing to me. They can go through kind of a catharsis with this, you know, and they realize that they've broken through another layer of deception. And my goal in all of this is actually the goal that I have in my, you know, what I do for a living, which is to pass on knowledge and understanding. That's my goal in this. I don't expect you to believe me. I want you to understand and know that what I'm telling you is true. Right? And I can't do that for you. It's something that you've got to do for yourself. But I can pass on the information and the sources which will allow you to know these things or to not to know these things if you don't want to look at them. And
sure.
It's the person's choice.
Sure.
Well said.
Well, we have run out of time. The 2 hours have gone by very rapidly, and I've certainly enjoyed having you both on the program, and I hope that people will look at the evidence and not believe what they have been told to believe. And those talking points came out immediately after the event. So thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you so much, Dr. Wood, for doing what you do, even though it's not popular, and you get a lot of heat for it. Thank you
for doing what you do.
Thank you, Deanna. Yes, very, very much appreciated.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon, and have a pleasant rest of the day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, listeners.